Welcome to the Pedophile Huntress. We are here to discuss and normalize the hard discussions around the crimes of childhood sexual abuse. Society avoids what we will face head on here in these discussions. We're each here tonight with a common goal, that you would be encouraged in heart and united in love. We welcome you all. Tonight's discussion is about triggers. Triggers are very personal and they're different to everyone. A person's triggers are activated through one or more of the five senses: sight, sound, touch, smell, and taste. Sensory memory can be extremely powerful, and a sensory experience associated with a traumatic event can cause an immediate emotional reaction that bypasses the reasoning part of our brain. What happens when you are the trigger? Incest is often your mother or your father. Tonight with me, I have returning guests on the panel, Emily and Sylvia. We're going to explore those triggers and talk to you about what those feel like in real time. So tonight I want to start with the sense of sight. Often someone who resembles the abuser or who has similar traits or objects like your clothing, your hair, a distinctive walk, the way you sound. What happens when that's you? So let's start right there, ladies, and talk about, I've had so many people, even in my own family, who say, what do you do when the trigger's you, right? Like I'll put lipstick on and I pull my purse up and I pull my little mirror out and I see my mom, and my mother was a sexual abuser to me. And immediately I'm off put and I want to put my, I want to reject myself. That's mm-hmm. the easiest way to say it. And so what does that look like for you guys? It's really hard when it's a trigger that I love that when I read that often it's someone who resembles you that will trigger you. Well, what if it's us? And oftentimes we do look like our parents. So mm-hmm. talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, most definitely. I was recently yesterday triggered just by a show that was on TV, and the man just reminded me so much of my father. I had to immediately last night, I had to immediately just change the channel. Mm-hmm. And I had to go and do a little prayer because, you know, triggers are, you know, things that maybe too, we haven't healed from yet, mm-hmm. which I mean, you know, this is a constant journey of healing we have, right?
Right.
You know, we'll always have that wound, that trauma wound. But it's just sometimes crazy because it's even sometimes when I'm doing my eyebrows, which is so random and so detailed. But I feel like I have my father's eyebrows. And mm-hmm. so sometimes when I'm doing them, I focus and then I have to step away. Mm-hmm. But like you said, they come in so many different forms. And we just have to be sure and give ourselves grace mm-hmm. and just step aside and speak to our hearts. And, you know, just be really honest, maybe even be able to call a friend instead of just trying to not react and not have the right. emotion, you know, that we're having. Of course, if we're, you know, and again, social occasions, you know, just certain. But I would just encourage everybody to pay attention to those triggers, because that means we've got a wound, you know. So if we get triggered, there's something that we're feeling at that time. And it's just right. so important to be honest about that and not just shove it, you know, and just try and keep it moving without acknowledging it.
Exactly. And we're going to talk about some things that we can do. And I love that you bring that up. And I do think that what you're talking about, the raw discussion of what it's like, I was sharing with Emily before you came on about my hip diagnosis today, and just having somebody understand that. What I really want to do today is just have that person listening understand that we get what it feels like when you yourself are the trigger. It's very odd. And we're going to talk yes. a little bit later about how our children trigger us. Because again, these are such mm-hmm. intimate things that it's so distressing. So Emily's the one actually who brought this topic up. So Emily, I want to hear from you about that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because For me in my healing journey, I was compartmentalizing and trying to continue in relationship with my family for a long time because I really wanted it to work. I was really hopeful that there would be a change of heart if I reached out and explained myself over and over and, you know, all those things, trying to reconcile. But then once I really started to recognize what had happened to me and what the reality of the situation was, and I started to actually integrate the truth, that's when I started to notice myself being similar.
That is such a great way to say it.
To my parents. And I realized that it was hard to integrate myself with myself. If that, I don't know if that makes any sense, but
no, it's another way to say self-projection.
And it was not even rejection so much as fear. So I lived in a lot of fear, like we talked about the last time I was on, with my parents, and also some just kind of ongoing sense of betrayal. Because my parents were very proper in a lot of ways, and my mom played piano beautifully, and I remember seeing her hands playing piano, but also remember seeing her hands playing piano and thinking, how could she play piano so beautifully but also physically abuse me so harshly? Like, how does that work together? And I remember that as a child, and when I see my hands in certain positions, I flash straight back to those moments of watching her play piano and remembering as a child feeling so confused and so angry. And then also with my hands, it's been my main difficulty. My hands are quite a mix of my parents' hands, and my dad was the one who was of my parents who sexually assaulted me, and that brings fear when I see my hand looking like my father's hand. It's very deep, like a primal fear, like a protect yourself flash.
Yeah, I get it.
And so I've had to do a lot of work. And Sylvia, I really appreciate what you said about reaching out and talking about it. So of course I talked with my therapist about it extensively, and she just listened and let me explore it and talk her through what I was experiencing. But I also just started calling safe friends and talking with them about it. And
yes,
and I'm so grateful I had safe friends who took me really seriously and were so kind and supportive of me. But I've done some things to try to alter the appearance of my hands sometimes to distract my brain. And so I've painted my fingernails and then just like had a commitment to always have my fingernails painted, because that helped my brain not equate my hand with my dad's hand. And it's interesting because I thought about wearing a ring on my right hand. I've never actually done it, but I've thought about these things like, okay, what could I do to confuse my brain a little bit? But when I'm going through a hard time with it, I give myself grace and say, okay, this is a week where I need to paint my fingernails. I just need to paint them, because my mom never had her fingernails painted, and my dad did not either. And then the other thing that I did, there's a few things, but another thing I did was I got a tattoo on the inside of my right wrist that is a Survivor's Unity fire rose. And I don't know if you've ever seen it before, but it is something that Lady Gaga has, and she's a sexual assault survivor. And it's something that was designed by an art student at Stanford who was also a survivor.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I got that to remind myself, no, you are choosing to grow as a pure white rose out of this horrible ordeal you've lived through.
Right.
And you're not alone in it. You're not alone. And so that was really powerful when I was finally ready to do that. And then that's with me every day. And that's been a really neat thing for me to do. The other thing is that with being a mother, my husband and I, when my daughter was a baby, we committed ourselves to not use physical discipline with her. Like, we made that commitment together. And I prayed over my hands because I just wanted them to be gentle. And I was somewhat afraid that I would repeat what my parents had done because, you know, we have their genes in us. And I was afraid of what my hands might do.
Well, and the environment, right? It's yeah. what we were, it's you're learning from them.
Yeah. And so I've spent a lot of time praying with my hands open and talking to God about them and looking at my hands and processing all this with my hands. And I wrote a poem. Like, I've just done all this work because it was something I wanted to have peace with. Right. And one thing I did this year is I started to play the piano again. And I hadn't played since I was 10 years old, partly because of everything in my family. And that's been cleansing for me too, because I can watch my hands play and live in that confidence that so far I have been carried through mothering and I've maintained a gentleness with my hands. And so it's almost like rebuilding myself.
Exactly. And that's kind of the theme I think that we need to get to, is that we are separate from them. And it's a very hard thing, because every time, almost every panel or every interview that I've done, there is this theme that we're somewhere complicit or very close to the abuser. And so I think what happens when we see those overlays is, see, and you talked about fear, and I did have great, great fear with my father. With my mother, I hate to say this, but I had a repulsion, because it was just so repulsive to me on many levels, taste and just all of it. And so I feel repulsed. So for me, isn't that funny that I say self-rejection, because I'm repulsed by it and I want to go away from it. It's like, Sylvia, you said, when I look in the mirror and I see that, I just want to go away from it. But I think what helps is that separation. And what I heard you say is, I'm doing all these things to show myself that I'm separate, because I think that it is this melding of our souls somewhere with them. You know, they talk about soul ties and these kinds of things. It's weird how abusers keep us in their back pocket, and it's hard to get out of that back pocket, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like, our love for them, or like you said, I'll do anything to stay close to these people. And it's not until you step out of denial that these things that we're talking about happen, because you said, which I've heard another man explain to me, that the closer he steps into the truth, the more he looks like his dad all the time. And it triggers him. He doesn't use the word trigger, but it's also, I'm separate from them, right? And so I love those distinctions that you've made in your physical body that say, I'm not. And it's funny, I have my mother's hands, and I always keep them done or nails on, because it doesn't look like her. But when I have nothing on, it's like her hands, and her hands were very cruel to me. And so it is very weird when you are the trigger. Like, I had a friend that couldn't take a bath because she was allergic to herself. And it's kind of the same thing a little bit, right? Like, we have, it's terrible. And so I love that a lot of these things are not written about or talked about, because I think only a survivor understands what that feels like when you're the trigger, right? And so, Sylvia,
100%.
What are some other things that you think you've done to make yourself separate? And isn't that funny? Just even eyebrows, you guys, because we had to look at them there our whole life. We were looking at them, right? And so,
yeah,
to live
in some really awful situations.
In some very awful situations. That's exactly right. And so we don't. It is stepping into truth. Again, the cost is that you're always in that truth, right? And so even looking at ourselves. But Sylvia, what are some other tools that you've tried to do? I like that you say, I often talk to God about it. That's one of my places I go to immediately. When I wake up, sometimes, you know, I used to wake up with really bad dreams. Most of those are gone now. But around the murder, I had really significant. Yeah. Isn't that cool? And so I always say that modalities are good, but they cannot heal a broken heart. Only God can.
Yes. Amen. And I did used to have a lot of nightmares. And of course, that's very triggering, because you know, terrible. You're actually reliving what actually happened to you. And I think, how in the world is my brain wanting to even take me back to that, you know?
Because it's not done yet.
Right. But I learned to just pray before bedtime and ask God to guard my mind and not allow the enemy, because, you know, he comes to us and we're very vulnerable when we're sleeping. So I learned how to pray that hedge of protection over my bed and my thoughts and my dreams.
I do that. I do that as well.
And then I think just working, like, you know, Emily saying, just doing the work, and you armor up, you know, with God and no devil, I'm not gonna, showering was triggering for me.
Showering
for a long time.
See, and isn't that terrible? It should be this comforting thing of getting clean.
Yes.
These are the things that are so awful that are taken from us. I mean, what was taken are things that we can't really explain until we talk this way. So keep going. Yeah.
And I mean, you have to take a shower, you know, you can't just, so I just made it something really special between like a prayer time. And they would put on some Christian music, or sometimes if it was just some kind of beautiful music that I wanted to listen to, and they'd light candles, and I would just dim the lights, and make it my sanctuary, and to let my memories know that you're not welcome here. This is my time.
You're changing it.
Yeah.
Changing the story.
We have to, you know, we have to do that. We have to
make those
changes. And I know there's a lot of people, because I've spoken with a lot of women, that they're very bathtubs, bath time, showering is very triggering. And, you know, and I got it because it was for me too. And now it almost never happens, but it does happen from time to time.
Well, and you know, that's kind of a distinction I want to make too, is that it's not always the enemy and triggers. Sometimes it's God saying, I need to heal this area and let's get this out. I remember going down to I lived in Oregon for years and years and years, in Washington, Oregon. And we'd go to the coast often. And one night I went down there, we were in this beautiful house. My daughter was there. We're having a lovely time. I smoked then. So I went out on the porch to have a cigarette, and the murdered lady came walking out of the woods. That's what it felt like to me.
Oh, wow.
I flipped out and ran in the house because it was an absolute flashback. That wasn't a trigger. Mm-hmm. That was a flashback. And so anyway, I went to my counselor. And one of the things that a good counselor could do, and anybody listening that has not been in counseling, get in counseling, a good one that's actually trained in this kind of trauma, childhood trauma. But he explained it to me. And so then I didn't have the fear associated with it, because it felt like a demon was chasing me, or like her spirit was getting me because, you know, she didn't have rest or whatever. It was terrifying, you guys. Of course, I didn't come in the house and say anything because you sound like a nut. But my counselor would explain. He'd say, Jody, where did you see that woman? And I'd say, oh my God, she was walking down that sidewalk towards me. And then I understood, it was just my mind bringing back that flashback. Why she was coming out of the woods, it felt like. I can't understand, but I do understand that it's not all darkness, that we have to walk through these things actually to get to the other side. Because I would be an absolute dead drunk every night. I would have to drink so much just so I wouldn't have dreams of this dead lady under my feet and all of this. I don't have to do that anymore. I can peacefully go to sleep. I can wake up at night and know that I'm okay, because I didn't change my reality. I walked through the bastard. There's a great big difference, right?
Yes.
So I just wanted to bring that up, because it is really important to know that all triggering things are not like Satan be gone. I think that's kind of a religious thing. Remember we talked about, you got 2 seconds to heal or 10 minutes and then God calls it good. Like, that's just, if we're triggered when we're 80, we're triggered when we're 80. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I don't think that's always dark. However, can darkness use things against us? 100% they can.
Yes. So
just to make that distinction there.
I wanted to say a couple things, Jody.
Please.
My therapist, who worked in child psychology and then worked with adults, and she specialized in trauma as well.
Good.
She always asked me to talk her through any flashback I had, trigger.
Yep.
And it took a lot of courage to describe it all. And especially like what you said, Jody, of just feeling like I was crazy. Like, I don't want to put myself down, but I was afraid of what was going on in me. Exactly. It was so confusing and so hard. And so I agree with you. And I encourage anyone who's listening to seek a trained therapist who is able to expertly walk with you through those things, because it's so illuminating. And for me, it's been a gradual process of like trusting God working in me to bring up what is next.
Exactly. The pace, and you can guide the pace. Sometimes I would walk away from counseling for a year because, you guys, I couldn't take anymore. Like, I just wanted to go smell a flower and watch the ocean. You know what I mean? So you can absolutely stop. Maybe I could have done my healing faster. I don't know. I'll never know, because I didn't. I did it.
But I also think that's right, because after we've been so manipulated and so controlled, I also think it's okay for us to have a choice 100%, in that. You know? Yes.
You know, my counselor would talk often about, because nightmares were the same. He'd even say to me this one time, I had this dream, you guys. I was back in the motel room. We had just killed this lady. I had done it, and I wrote something on the mattress. But I was taking a break from counseling, and my counselor said, Jody, I wish so bad you would have come in, because I couldn't remember what I wrote. Isn't that funny how that is? But he felt it was very significant. But it disappeared. It was like disappearing ink on this mattress. And, you know, it disappeared from my mind, because you guys know what we do with trauma. We let it disappear. So it is very important, even our dreams. If you're not going to a counselor, start journaling. Journaling really opened my life to healing before I ever went in. I remember writing down, the first thing I ever wrote was, how my heart ached while I put on a smile. Because when you come from families of incest, you walk around with a smile on, you're a good kid. You actually have to be a bad kid to start healing, because you have to go against everything your parents taught you. So I guess I'm a rebel with a cause, because I ain't listening to them anymore. But that is, it's very, very true. If you don't have a counselor, you cannot afford it. There are a lot of states that offer things, but definitely start journaling.
Yes.
One of the things I did want to talk about too, because I know now, Sylvia, do you have children? I can't remember if you do or don't have children.
I do. I have one daughter.
I thought you did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And how old is she?
She's 20.
Okay. So my girls are, don't get mad at me, girls, I'm pretty sure they're 36 and 39 now, something like that. Oh, they're 2 years and 7 months apart, but B's getting old, and sometimes I can't remember. Now, Emily, how old are your children?
I have one daughter, and she is 7.
Okay. So very honestly, we were talking about how our resemblance of our parents can trigger us. The other thing that I remember my counselor bringing up that I wanted us to talk about was how our children trigger us. And so the problem is, in my life, my abuse started when I was very young. We moved out of that house, and I turned 4. So it started when I was in 3. And my father continued, and my mother, they both continued to abuse me months before I left their house. I got married at 18. And so the triggers that our children do, my girls were more triggering to me actually when they became adults, because my mother was so, it horrified me, the things I had to do to my mother. It was disgusting. There's just no other word for it. So when they grew, you guys, this is what was terrible, is all I would see is like a vagina in my mind's eye that would like overcome them. It was terrible. And I still fight with that deeply. And it was my counselor that said, Jody, your children are triggering to you. So talk to me a little bit about that. Because isn't that horrible? You guys hear these, my girls are beautiful, beautiful. It has nothing to do with them. Mm-hmm. And it breaks my heart that I still get that imagery, because they're women now. And my mother was a woman who abused me. And, you know, maybe it's more logical in my mind that a man has a penis. And I, you know, I wasn't I was more triggered by men's anger, because in my mind, all anger led to murder. But so anyway, talk about those triggers that are girl, because unfortunately at different ages, they trigger different things, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I feel like Tessa did not really trigger me a lot when she was younger. I can really identify with you saying when She was older because I could see my father was the disciplinarian in the home, not my mother. My mother's just so kind, and I could see her having the same, like Emily, that you spoke about, that, you know, between, you know, yourself and the father, that y'all decided that's just, and I know that's how my mother was. So luckily I didn't have any of those, you know, mother triggers. But since my father was my abuser and the disciplinarian of the family, I could see myself when I would go to discipline Tessa and, you know, she would maybe talk back to me, you know, probably around nine, I think around 9 or 10 is when she started, you know, the preteen, and where they, you know, they're not so agreeable anymore. You know, they want to have a voice. I'm like, you're nine. You don't need a voice right now.
Right.
But I would see myself, you know, losing my temper with her. And then I would get angry at myself and start and have a lot of self-hatred for myself, when really I'm just disciplining my daughter. But, you know, like you said, we, our genes, our makeup, and I am 100% my father, but my kindness and my giving, you know, and putting others a lot of times before myself, which I've really had to work on that in the last few years, comes from my mother. She's a very soft, gentle person.
That's beautiful. I'm so thankful you had that.
Yeah, me too. You're very nurturing. I was born to be a mother. And
that's beautiful.
I wish I could have had more, but it just wasn't in the cards, and that's okay, because the one I got is perfect for me. And then I would, you know, that self-hatred, then that's when I would go run to the bottle.
Right.
And so when I would run to the bottle, then of course that makes me react not the way I would if I was sober with my daughter.
I did the same thing.
And it was very painful for her. And probably by the time she was almost 11, she said, "Mom, I want to go live with Dad." I was like, wait, what? Like,
oh, yeah.
What do you mean? Because her dad was not Father of the Year, and but would never abuse her. Thank goodness. He just didn't fit. It's strange that I had him as a partner, because normally we pick people like our abusers. Mm-hmm. But and I'll never forget it. And I said, okay, do you just, she was like, and I want Dad to come and pick me up right now. And I said, okay. And he came and he picked her up, and probably within 3 or 4 days, I went over to go take her some clothes, because she was still over there. She'd never lived with him. And she handed me a letter. And that little child wrote the most beautiful letter. But she saved me from continuing in that behavior, you know.
It's awesome. Don't our kids do? Yes, they.
Yeah.
I have,
there are little saviors sometimes.
They really are. Yeah. Because their voices are saying, yeah, you're hurting me. You're killing our relationship.
And I didn't, you know, beat her up or
bruise
her or anything. But it was very unhealthy, the language and the tone that I was using.
Oh, and I got drunk a lot. And that hurt my children very much. I'd come home drunk. I was drunk a lot. I mean, I just was. For years, I was drunk a lot.
Yeah.
And still going to counseling and all that. But boy, I couldn't wait to escape. And it hurt my children deeply. It did. Yeah. Emily, go ahead and talk a little. That I get it, Sylvia. It's so true. That's such a beautiful thing to say, because, right, our dads had full control. Let's use that, right? So, Emily, what did that look like for you?
Remind me, children, her being a trigger to me.
Yes, or maybe she's not. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think, of course, I wouldn't call it a trigger as much as it has forced me to process my childhood more, because I have revisited it in watching her grow and going through the process of her babyhood, especially. And unfortunately, I was still in relationship with my family when my daughter was born. And unfortunately, my mom spent quite a bit of time at our home. I had already made a pretty clear boundary with my dad, so he was not really in the picture in the relationship, like time spent. But my mom was there quite a bit. And that really brought out some bad patterns in me because I wanted to please her and I was still trying to fawn to her and play into her game, I guess. And then I found myself entering into patterns of thought or even talking about my daughter in ways that were in line with her, which were quite cruel and almost making my daughter out to be somehow evil, like, and not worthy, not worthy.
I get it.
And yeah, it's like a very ugly, subtle, and very sad, unloving mentality. And I would feel myself slipping into that when my mom was at our home because I wanted to please her. And I started to realize that I couldn't be true to myself and to what I believed was loving as God called me to be and who I wanted to be for my daughter and be with her. Like, I didn't have that capacity in my own self. And I tried to talk with her about it and she never got it. She like never tracked with me. I wrote her letters about it. She never was able to hear from me. And that's when it was clear to me that I'm not going to be able to play both sides of this all the time. So I don't know if that's a trigger as much as I realized really what I had gone through.
Right. I get baby. It though.
And it was a lot of, it was a lot of grief, a lot of grief for me.
You know, it reminds me, this is years and years and years ago, this pastor said he was talking about going back to your family of origin. And he said, think of it this way. You get to the door and right at the door, there's all of these labels. And when people walk through the door, they pick up the label that that house gave them. And I never forgot that because that's kind of what you're saying, right? Like, when you go back to that environment, we pick up our labels and we think we're not going to, you know, like I read that, I think it was two panels ago about my daughter watching me around my father and I had come out about the abuse, but we all had to go back to a family reunion or a family funeral. I'm sorry, a friend of the family. And she said, my mom went into autopilot, some kind of weird version of my mother I'd never seen. I was bringing him pie, getting him coffee, laughing at his jokes. And here's this man. It was a murdering, you know, a murderer and raped me for all of my childhood. And I immediately went into autopilot. And, you know, I thought about that the other day, actually, after that panel discussion. If my father were to walk in the room, I know now I could not, I would not be that person. And you know how I did that is I'd go see him. I'd see him a handful of times and confront him on these things. I mean, we had murder between us. And by every time, a lot of people do not go back and confront. And my counselor would always advise me, Jody, you know, it's the best thing. And it gave me back my power, you guys, but I would physically be terrified. I mean, terrified. And I did the same thing with my mother. The last time I saw my mother, I made her look at me and I said, for all of it, I forgive you. I just needed to release it. But I also needed her to look in my eyes and say, everything that you've done to me, I remember first. You know, it's empowering, isn't it, you guys?
Acknowledge that.
Yes.
That you know that I know, you know.
Like, exactly. Because there is power in that. There genuinely, it's empowering. It says, you're not in charge anymore. I'm an adult. And I have adult children now. And I have a different role in their life. I'm not the authoritarian. Now that's they're adults. You know what I mean? Yeah. I get to love them and enjoy fine, you know, food and wine and all this stuff, but that changes. But in an abusive family, that never changes. They keep the authority until you die because guess what? They're still grooming us. That's really what completely. That's about. Yeah.
And I think in terms of the triggering part, I started to become very I guess aware that they were repeating the pattern with my daughter you know, if they spent time with her.
100%.
And so that then led me to feel quite a bit of fear, and I stood up for her. It was when I started to find my voice, was because of their treatment of my daughter, which of course links to other things about, you know, growth as a person. But I think that watching all of that did take me back to those years, those early years of my childhood. And it forced me to process things. I don't think I went into full panic or flashback, but it was definitely made me remember all of it, and I had that awareness. Now, my daughter is 7, and that's when the ongoing sexual abuse started in my life. So I know that as she moves through these years, there may be more, excuse me, more of that quote triggering, but I have not experienced that so far. Mm-hmm. And it might be partly because I've done so much work. I'm hoping.
And that's awesome. We'll see. Right. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you said I want to go back to is watching the pattern with your children. I am telling you, these are evil colonies. I mean, I cannot tell you, because you know, you can't call them godly. So there's only two things in life. It's mm-hmm. good or bad. Right. And so I've watched people do this. They see how their children are treated, and you know what they do? They turn and look the other way. Oh. And mm-hmm. you see it, that you guys, that's generational trauma, mm-hmm. allowing yes. that generational trauma. I don't really know that in their hearts, yeah. they probably are not saying, oh, I'm going to hurt it, but they've never stood up for themselves. So they mm-hmm. don't know how to stand up for their children. And so it always starts with UCU. We've got to see ourselves so we can see our children.
Yes.
What was happening when I wasn't healing is I couldn't see my kids because I was so dumbfounded by my own pain and my own loss mm-hmm. and my own grief. And I couldn't find my way out of the paper bag. You know what I mean? And so to see your children, like you just explained, you have to see yourself, and you mm-hmm. have to see the hurt that you have. And so many, there's a cost to that, right, you guys? Because then now all of a sudden we have to heal, because to step in our stories, yes. we have to look mm-hmm. at the eyebrows that look like our father's. We have to look at the lips in our hands. And, you know, mm-hmm. you can't separate that until you dissect it. And then all of a sudden it starts falling away. But mm-hmm. depending on how long, and many of us, you guys, the severe childhood trauma year after year after year makes that constant work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'd love to say it's not that I'm just going to never have this, but you have to do the work. I love my counselor would always say that, Jody, you are who you are because you've done the work. But that, you guys, yeah. for 13 years, I dated, but I didn't live with anybody. I overdrank. Like, I was doing the work, but it was so hard. It was yeah. so hard. So I think that's such a good distinction. When you see it happening to your children, change the channel, walk away. I don't know, you guys, can you stay close to these families that don't change? I don't believe you can. I think in our hearts we want to, because they're our family. But talk about that. Sylvie, I see you shaking your head. Talk to me about that.
I can't do it because for numerous reasons, but there's a lot of generational curse, you know, curses going on yes. in my father's 100%. Side of the family. Mm-hmm. My mother's side never had any. And it's an exact reflection of who she is today and why she is, because their family doesn't know anything like that. You know, they never had that in their family, where, you know, my father did. And just being him and his brothers were so alike. So being around them was just I couldn't do it.
You probably lit up it. Like a firecracker.
Yes, exactly. Right. It was like the roadrunner exactly. going the other way.
There's a shiny, like, there's a squirrel. Like, I mean, yeah. it's just I totally get that.
But there is so much power in, you know, what you said, Jody, about confronting, mm-hmm. you know, like your mother. And like, I went back and when I was older and I confronted my father, and, mm-hmm. you know, now I have a voice. I'm an adult now, and you cannot mm-hmm. do this to me anymore. And I know exactly what you did. So you can hide behind whatever you want to hide behind.
And they'll call you a liar. They all
or
do.
Whatever. Yes. Yes.
Nuts or sluts.
Yes. Right. But it's, yeah, we're the little, yeah, the lost puppies and all that. No,
with mental illness.
Yes, I'm not a, you know.
We've heard it all.
Yeah, bipolar, depressed.
Yep.
You know,
alcoholic, on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, yes. But I think it's, that is so powerful because even in Journey to Heal, if you can't confront your abuser, that's okay. But it is required and asked of you, if you can, to write a letter confronting your abuser. What would you say? And a lot of these girls will eventually mail that. I'm working with a girl right now. She eventually mailed that letter to her father.
That's huge.
And the ugliness that he came back at her with, and the threats, and the, you know, it's like, it's how horrible. Dare he? Yeah. But you know what? She's rising above it. And it's she awesome. Is just becoming such a beautiful young lady.
That's and so I think cool.
It is so cool. So yes. I just hope people listening will know that, you know, if it's your time, because it takes a lot of strength to do it,
does.
Do it in your time, but write that letter, even if you're not going to send it or you can't send it. Who knows? Maybe one day you will, but there's power in those words and taking back. You know, hey, I'm not this little victim. I'm a survivor, and I wear it proudly.
That's so true. But you know, even if you have to start talking to your cat or your dog, right. Talk it out, you know, practice. I do that because I do a lot of presenting, you know, to boards and, you know, pretty groups that are kind of scary. And you know what?
Yes.
I always talk it out first. And so just talk it out. It really sounds cool. And that's what we're here doing together too.
Yes.
One of the things I want to do with the time that we have left is we always open up and talk about these realities. I want us to talk about some of the tools that we use because all of us have been through healing. I know I use tools all the time. I can watch a movie, you guys, and be so triggered around a murder scene or if somebody's throat gets slit. I used to freeze and be stuck until I called somebody and they talked me off a ledge. You know, I'm talking about a counselor because they were on speed dial in those days. And I didn't use them often because, of course, you know, we don't reach out, but when you have to. But I've learned how to go through that. So I want to talk. I mean, to me, the things that I use the most are grounding techniques. And so I don't know. I want you guys to talk about it. I wanted to say some things about that. Like these exercises can work, like name five things you see in a room right now. That got me through that murder memory. And I remember being on the phone with my counselor and she's like, Jody, I just want you to look around the room. Don't make any judgments about what you're seeing. Focus on an object and tell me about that object. It helps you guys. Sometimes you can get such a visceral reaction. You can't even breathe because especially when fear comes around it, you know, like we've talked about memories that come up. So looking around your room, sometimes you can name things that you feel right now. My feet are on the floor. My chair is soft. I'm feeling the arm of my chair. There's a candle across the room. You know, honestly, you guys, I use that so often. I would start getting almost a like a panic attack feeling when I'd be driving down the road and I'd say, okay,
you're
I can
spiraling.
Feel. Yes. I can feel my car's tires on the pavement. Like I would just start going through it. I can feel them going around and all of those things, right? They help. So what do you guys, there's another one that says name three things that you're hearing right now, the TV, birds outside, but to refocus those things, it brings you back to that reality. Kind of like when I put my lipstick on and I see my mother's face, you're Jody. You are not her.
That's exactly what I do. I say,
you know, no, I say you. It. I have
you're
to.
You.
Every day.
No, you're you. You're
and it's
you.
Sad because, you know, we read these stories that say, oh, I look like my dad, or there's this whole blog about, you know, I got all my looks from my mom and they love it. And for us, it's damaging, like another thing taken. And I don't focus on what's taken, but it's just the truth, right? And another thing is they say you can name two things that you smell right now. Often I will smell my coffee and taste it, you know, like, or whatever it is. I have tea, that kind of thing. And the last thing, and then I want you guys to talk about it because I love this one too, is say something good about yourself. You know, my mother's an attractive lady and I'll say, thank you, mom, for giving me a pretty face. You know what I mean? Like something kind about something that they gave because my parents were very good looking people. It's so sad that they chose the path that they chose. And, you know, So anyway, those are some of my lists. You guys talk to me about things that you do. I love how you change the shower. I just want to leave some examples that we haven't really done that, but I know that we all know them, right? So talk to me about that.
Yes. I think I get a lot. I have done the grounding techniques before when I'm really like a panic attack. I'd never had a panic attack before in my life until my older years. I used to think, wow, I wonder, like, I want to empathize for these people, but I'm like, I don't even know what that is.
That
like,
started what do you with mean? Me too, I think, in menopause.
I'm like, what? This panic attack? So, but so I did do that.
Horrible.
I think for me, the way I deal with those things is serving. I have a servant's heart. And I get so much healing from that, from my church. And, you know, serving, and thank goodness, it's just a wonderful faith-based church. And I, you know, that's how Kaylee and I met. And that was 3 years ago. And we're thick as thieves. And, you know, we've been through this together, and she's been there with me. And, you know, I start another group in 2 weeks, and but I do have to have those things, because me as leading them through this, and, you know, hearing all their stories, and everybody's in a room, and I'm the one who has to, you know, keep the calm and be the leader. And so I have to take care of myself. And I realize that if I don't do that self-care, then that's when I start to, you know, spin out and start feeling, you know, very, so self-care, serving, and self-care are my two.
That's beautiful. I love that.
My two biggies. And I'll make it special sometimes, you know, and invite a friend, and if she can't afford it, so this time, how about I got you my treat, you know, let's just go and indulge and just be girls and, you know, just have a great time. So serving and self-care.
That's
and women
beautiful.
As women, a lot of times we don't do that, because as women we put everybody else first, you know.
So true. You take the best pork chop, I'll take the crumb that's left on
I'll
the plate.
I'll take the bone.
Exactly. It's
okay. Well, there's no meat on that bone. That's okay. I can kind of chew on it. I'll be fine. Yeah.
So true. All right, Emily, you go ahead and share with us.
Yeah, actually, I gathered. So I've read so many books. I love to read. And one of the books that I purchased for myself, I found it on Amazon because I was struggling a lot at work when I was in my job. If there were people who were questioning what I wanted to do in my patient management, or who were in some way in conflict with me, I wanted to be able to enter into those discussions with strength and not just fawn or people please. Or if someone looked like my abuser, there were a lot of things coming up at work, and I was frustrated because I wanted to be able to maintain my excellence in my job. So I bought a book called Thriving at Work. It's by Nancy Brooke and Cynthia Cranin. And I've worked through the whole thing. It's a workbook. And so it lets you talk, you know, it has prompts and it helps you. And so a lot of things were helpful from that. And one of them was a mantra. And I've kept it with me for probably
how
long now, like 8 years maybe. And I put it on post-its all over the place. And it says, my energy is calm, focused, and directed toward my immediate goal. So that's long. That's a lot of words, but I've memorized it, and it goes through in my
mind.
Even when I'm in traffic, like you said, Jody, my energy is calm, focused, and directed toward my immediate goal. Because sometimes when we're processing things, our mind will take us so far away from where we are physically that I sometimes worry about myself. Like, am I going to be able to safely get myself from one place to another?
Guys, I'll check out, right? I mean, I'm on the roof somewhere.
I'm so caught up in whatever I'm healing or thinking about or remembering.
Yes.
It's almost like a flashback hangover or a nightmare hangover.
It is.
That's what it feels like.
And it's called dissociation sometimes too, because in childhood we lived a lot of dissociation, which would be another great thing to talk about, because I dissociated, I think, half my life before I moved into healing. So keep going.
So in any case, I use that phrase, and I used it today when I was in traffic, because I was like, I do not want to rear end anybody. Like, no, that I don't want that to happen. I'm on my way to pick up my daughter. I need to stay functional so that my energy is calm, focused, and directed toward my immediate goal. That's helped me at work. I'm assessing a patient right now. I need to help them with what they're what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And so that book, Thriving at Work, has been one of the most practical things to help me. And that's just one example from it. But I use music as well.
Yes.
And music is very helpful.
All the time. I'd rather have, me too. Music over TV if I can.
Yeah. And, I also use walking outdoors, because to me, I know for different people, people feel safe in different environments, but for me, being outdoors feels safe. So going on a walk, hearing the birds, always hearing the birds, it links to me knowing I'm cared for. So those are helpful for me. Those are some things.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just want to touch on that for a minute. I blog, and through blogging, I have met a lot of people around the world. And I'll tell you, some people, you guys, are agoraphobic. They cannot get out of their homes. Mm-hmm. They do not have jobs. They are almost disabling themselves, because now they move into disability, because it's crippling, you guys. If you don't heal, it's crippling. And so many people, they work for themselves. I had this one woman say, you know, we talked about that. And so it's such a huge thing. There are many people that are not doing as well as we are. And it's hard to remember that, you know, you get this message like, I'm barely hanging on. And so that's why we're here. And that's why we're here talking about it. But it's huge what you're talking about, Emily, about people that work is so hard. And healing hangover. I actually did a blog one time called Healing Hangover, because it's a real thing. Like when you have a real big memory that comes back, oh, you're sore. You're so sore for like a week sometimes. And you know what? Drink tea, take baths, light candles, let that soreness sit with you because it needs to. That's a wound that festered that you just healed. And so I don't want those moments, but I love those moments because I know that I just journeyed through something that was really important. That's really beautiful. Emily, do you happen to have, you said that you made a poem. Do you happen to have that by you?
Oh, well, I went through this whole other thing that was really meaningful. I don't know if I have it near me. Let's see.
Okay. Just when you said that, I thought.
In here. I'll find it for the next time.
But okay.
One other program I went through, is called The Body Positive, and I became a facilitator for it.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's like a whole nother episode, but that also gave me lots of exercises on and prompts for being at peace or growing in being at peace with yourself.
You know, my daughter went through some, as we've talked about before, most people who've been sexually abused have some kind of eating disorder. I haven't met one that doesn't have addiction problems and eating disorders. Anyway, so she was reading this one book and she said, Mom, get a big piece of paper. This is when she was a teenager, and I want you to draw out on this piece of paper how big you think you are. And then you lay in that, and then you have a person trace your real body. And you guys, you'll be stunned how big you make yourself, how much bigger you make yourself than you actually are. It was quite eye-opening. It was really something. So it is really true. Perception, good self-talk, you know, good care, all of those things. When you fail, forgive yourself immediately, because God does. And then just get up and keep going. Don't beat yourself up. You know, my dad used to make us pay. And after a week or two, he'd come to you and say, okay, the slate's clean. So that lived in me. I had this constant guilt that sometimes I'll hear God say, you didn't do anything wrong. Cause I always feel like I'm doing something wrong. I haven't even done anything yet, but I did something wrong. And then when I do something wrong, it's really wrong. So, you know, be kind to yourself. So if you guys have any closing thoughts, we are at time. Thank you so much for your time. It was beautiful. I appreciate it. I want to give it back to you guys if you have anything that you'd like to say, and then we'll close.
Well, I think everybody said some really, really important things. And I think one of the most important things that I've had to learn is to give myself grace.
Yes.
Give yourself that grace.
100%.
No matter what that looks like for you, you deserve it. You're loved, you're important, and you have value. And anything that's valued deserves grace. And give that to yourself.
Amen. Emily, go ahead.
Yeah, something I think I noticed, Sylvia, that you said that really resonated with me is that it's such an empowering and a self-empowering act to create our own safe space.
Yes.
To create our own place that we feel safe and we can grow and heal. So exploring what that is for each person, if it's creating, you know, your own room that's safe, or a community of friends that's safe, or no matter how small it is, if you live in a small place, if it's one closet that's safe, some place for you to be physically that you can be comforted. And I just think that's
so good.
So important. And so that's one thing I would say to think of for yourself, how you could grow that and empower yourself in that.
I love that. Yep. And I think I would just underline that complete forgiveness for yourself. We are imperfect human beings. And the biggest thing that I have learned is that God does not want me perfect. He doesn't expect me to be perfect. And he does have unconditional love. I had a person say to me last night, Jody, unconditional love doesn't exist. You know what I want to end this broadcast with? Unconditional love does exist. It's so sad. And that person deals with a lot of just bitterness and you know, a very unhappy person. So we just want to say God loves you. There is unconditional love. And we'll see you next time. God bless. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.